Next case for argument, United States versus Griffin, Mr. Paul.
Good morning. May it please the court, I'm Brian Fall, here today on behalf of John Griffin. There are two issues for me to discuss today. The first is the applicable burden of proof at sentencing, and the second is the distinction between crack cocaine and base cocaine.
Well, we've been through that a lot, right? Do you have anything new on that, or is that just a rehash?
On the crack versus base issue?
Yes.
Well, it's more of the clear error by the district court, which in finding that it was proved by preponderance in this case that it was crack. And under any standard, Mr. Griffin submits that the government did not prove that this was crack cocaine.
But I say we've been through this in a zillion cases. Is there something different about the evidence here?
Well, there's nothing different, I think, necessarily distinct about the evidence here, other than that at no point first of all, it wasn't alleged. This is the Western District of Wisconsin is distinct in the fact that at least prior to the position of this case in the district court, it did not allege in indictments that crack cocaine was the form of cocaine base that the defendant is charged with. Moreover, it wasn't even in the plea agreement. It wasn't in the PSR until explicitly in the PSR this was crack cocaine. The guideline level was a level 30, which would implies crack cocaine because that's the definition in the guidelines. But nowhere up until the objection by Mr. Griffin did the word crack cocaine ever appear. So I think that's what may distinguish this from other cases, which gets to the issue of the unclearness of the definition of cocaine base versus crack. And that this court has discussed how it doesn't find that smokable or some of these other qualifiers that other circuits have decided that's the should be impugned to the definition.
So bottom line is your argument that United States versus Edwards changed the standard for the burden of proof on the type of cocaine base?
No. United States Blakely versus Washington changed the standard of proof. But when you combine Edwards, and Edwards itself is a mandatory minimum case, so it's not the earlier Booker and Redrick. Those cases deal with the base crack issue in the guidelines. What Edwards did, I think, is it clarified the fact that there are other forms of base. Edwards didn't say that there's crack and free base and that's it. There are other kinds, and that's something that in the district court in Edwards, which this court left untouched in its decision in Edwards, said that there was another. There could be. They didn't have any of the evidence that this was some sort of sodium bicarbonate process used to distill crack. So I think that's where Edwards comes in, is that it acknowledges that there's other forms out there. And if that's the case, the government needs to prove that at sentencing. Whether this court is going to believe it's by a preponderance, by beyond a reasonable doubt, as Mr. Griffin submits, it's forced to do that. And had the Western District of Wisconsin included in its indictment that they were charging him with distribution of cocaine base in the form of crack cocaine, we wouldn't be here today on this issue. Either Mr. Griffin would have pled to crack cocaine, or he would have taken that issue to the jury. But because the United States Attorney's Office for the Western District didn't do that, the issue was created. And then based on the evidence presented at the sentencing hearing, it couldn't establish, by either standard, that this was, in fact, crack cocaine.
Well, I don't know how you can argue that, since all of the evidence was that it was crack cocaine. All the evidence submitted at the sentencing hearing that this was cocaine based in the form of crack.
Right, but the expert, first of all, didn't test the material himself. But secondly, he said he couldn't tell if it was or wasn't. He said you can't tell scientifically because he said the sodium bicarbonate gets taken out of the process. It's once it's base, all you can test for is base. Now, he said maybe it looks like crack. Yeah, but maybe there's another rock-like.
I don't understand you. Well, so what is your conception of proof of crack?
Well, there has to be, and that's. I think it's going to be difficult.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like from what you're arguing.
No, I think it's going to be very difficult for in this
it can
situation.
Never be proved. So all these cases over the years, they're all wrong. So you can't prove that. Can never prove that something is crack. That's your.
Well, no, I'm not saying that. I'm saying would it be crack as it's defined in the guidelines.
What you regarded as adequate proof that something was crack.
Well, had there been. Yeah, at one point, an admission.
Well, that's not really a common form of proof, right?
I'm.
So, what would be proof? Not an admission. That takes it out of proof. What would be solid proof that something is cracked?
That perhaps there had been some sodium bicarbonate left. In the Wisconsin crime lab tested the material, and in probably in a perfect laboratory distillation of crack. The expert testified that there probably isn't any sodium bicarbonate left over. But in the case of where a person on the street is making this as a microwave or on the stovetop, then more than likely there's going to be some sodium bicarbonate left. Now, had they tested for that, it would have been hard to say that this wasn't crack. And there's also a question whether which cocaine salt was used. Was this cocaine sodium hydrochloride, or was it some other kind of salt? I mean, the way that the guideline definition is set up, it suggests that it's processing cocaine hydrochloride with sodium bicarbonate to make crack. And it says usually, but it leaves open that there's other possibilities to make other forms of cocaine base. And, 25 years ago, if you would ask somebody if there was any other form of base other than free base, they would have said no, because there wasn't at that time. So there's the possibility that there is something else out there. Maybe it's the drug-making process being perfected to something else until, and as you, this court talked about in its Booker, the Booker cocaine case, it said that Congress was concerned something about the solvent-making process, and that's how it used to define crack cocaine, but that didn't make it into the guidelines. The Ninth Circuit says smokable. That's not in the guidelines. And under these courts' cases, it leaves open the opportunity for there to be other forms of crack cocaine. If it was...
Well, the government isn't required to exclude all other speculative alternatives in order to prove that the substance in question was crack. All they have to do is call a witness who will testify credibly that what it was, it looked like crack. As my 20 years of law enforcement experience demonstrates, crack looks like. That's right. Good enough.
And under the preponderance standard, that the burden for Mr. Griffin is harder. But when you move it to beyond a reasonable doubt, which is where Mr. Griffin argues that the burden should be, you have to have more.
Forgive me, but I have a real problem here because Griffin admits to distributing cocaine base, right?
Correct.
And the evidence through the years seems to show us that there's no chemical distinction between the various forms of cocaine base, right?
Correct. Generally, there is not. In perfect laboratory results, the other stuff gets taken out.
So what is it we're arguing about?
Well, that's the problem, is that it's just not base. If it's the fact that people say base, there is free base and there's crack. If they wanted to say crack, I mean, this should have been in the indictment. It should be in the guidelines. If we're talking about crack, it should be crack. And especially when we take a heightened burden of proof, the government has to do, it is always up to the judge to take the totality of the evidence and make that decision. And Mr. Griffin argues that it would be very difficult to do in this case, given the beyond a reasonable doubt standard of proof. And you can see the difference if you look at the definitions in section 2D1.1 of the guidelines. If you compare the definitions of cocaine base to things like hashish and hashish oil, which are very specific. They discuss everything it must can be contained in there, and the things that can be used to process it, whether there can be any plant material in it or not. Had the cocaine base or the crack cocaine definition taken that kind of specificity, again, there probably wouldn't be an issue here. But the issue is it's left open. And on a beyond a reasonable doubt standard, Mr. Griffin submits that the government did not prove beyond a reasonable doubt, and most likely even a preponderance standard, that this was, in fact, crack cocaine form of base.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Fall. Mr. Connell?
Good morning. My name is Paul Connell. I'm an assistant United States attorney in Madison, Wisconsin, and I was responsible for the prosecution of Mr. Griffin below. Mr. Griffin raises two issues here today. First, whether his sentence is plainly erroneous because the district court used a preponderance of the evidence standard as opposed to a beyond a reasonable doubt standard to identify the drugs at sentencing. And then secondly, whether the district court clearly erred when it found that his cocaine base was, in fact, crack.
Well, here, of course, the defendant admitted in his plea that the substance was
cocaine base, Your Honor.
Cocaine base.
Yes.
So the only issue is what type of cocaine base.
That's right.
But if he hadn't conceded that the substance was cocaine base,
then we wouldn't have a plea.
But would chemical analysis be required?
Your Honor, if you look at one of the experts we put up at sentencing, Mr. Block, who's the head of the drug identification section of the crime lab, if everything else is lost in the process of producing either freebase cocaine or crack cocaine, the only two known forms of cocaine base, they do still appear quite different. And so what you would have is, if you have freebase cocaine, it's a white crystal, and that is nothing like crack cocaine. Which is off-white, lumpy, hard. It's hard. It looks like soap in a lot of cases.
So would it be enough proof if a buyer thought it was crack? Would that be enough proof?
If the person that the defendant had distributed to said, yeah, well, I ordered, you know, base or rock, and it looks yellow, off-white, I thought it was crack, it seemed to me that would be plenty.
That would be enough?
I would think so, by
a
preponderance.
So that's enough proof.
I would certainly think so, since preponderance is the standard, it has been the standard, and it should remain the standard. So let me address the first issue about what is the standard here. Mr. Griffin argues that he would like it raised to beyond a reasonable doubt. He didn't raise it below. It's for plain error. It's on plain error review here. Here he can't meet the first two elements to show there was error or that it was plain. This court has consistently held in a litany of cases that identification of the drug type is done by the district court by a preponderance of the evidence. Those are laid out in my brief. Furthermore, this court, post-Booker, has said that sentencing factors are by a preponderance by the district court. That's McReynolds, for instance, in United States versus Dean. No circuit court has adopted Mr. Griffin's argument that beyond a reasonable doubt standard should be used. Both the Second and Eighth Circuits have explicitly rejected that. However, just pretend for the sake of argument he could meet those first two elements. He couldn't show actual prejudice because the district court got it right in this case, which would lead me to the second issue, which is that the district court did not clearly err by finding that this cocaine base was crack. Here the defendant relies on U.S. versus Edwards and on the facts. I would respectfully submit to you the defendant just misreads Edwards. In Edwards, this court just restated its longstanding legal rule that for purposes of the guidelines or for purposes of triggering the mandatory minimums under Section 841, the government has to prove that the cocaine base is crack. The factual, what happened at the district court in Edwards was not before this court. Nothing in the district court's opinion in Edwards or this court's opinion in Edwards talks at all about what the government has to do to prove that a sample of cocaine base is actually crack. And in fact, if Mr. Griffin's view is to prevail as to what Edwards really stands for, it would be almost impossible for the government to bring a historical crack cocaine conspiracy case because you would just have witnesses coming in and talking about what the drugs looked like. And in his world, that's not enough. The last point I would make is, although the government is not shifting the burden to Mr. Griffin at all, at least in Edwards, the defendant there took a sample of the cocaine base and had it tested, and his expert, for whatever reason, came back and said it is cocaine base, but it is not the crack form. Let me touch last on the actual facts before the district court here. Here, the informant told the police that he had purchased crack from the defendant prior to becoming an informant. At the direction of the police, he was ordered to buy crack. He paid the going price for the going street price for crack cocaine. Mr. Griffin did not contest six paragraphs in the PSR, paragraphs 6, 10, 13, 16, 17, and 19.
What's the difference in price? Does the record tell us the difference in price between crack?
I believe Special Agent Phillips testified about what the going rate was for crack, for cocaine-based crack, for an ounce versus powder, and that's how one of the reasons they were able to know. On top of the fact that obviously the crime lab results came back and said it is cocaine-based and looks like crack. Furthermore, Mr. Block testified at length at sentencing about how the two forms of known of cocaine-based and solid form are made, that he hasn't seen free-based cocaine in over 20 years, which would be the Richard Pryor version, which led him to light himself on fire. Furthermore, Free-based cocaine appears as a white crystal, Judge Rovner, and you asked about that before. Crack cocaine looks nothing like this. And last, I would just point out that Judge Crabb correctly noted whatever happened in the district court in Edwards, she was not bound by why Judge Shader found as he did. And unless there are other questions from the panel, I would just rely on my argument here today and the brief submitted.
Thank you, Mr. Connell. And your time expired, Mr. Fall, so we thank you also.